Live from Earth, it's Space Radio. This is Paul Sutter, and coming up, we're talking about an interstellar interloper into the solar system and searching inside pyramids with physics. And of course, taking listener questions about all things in the universe, because this show is about the entire universe. We record the show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation. And in today's Blue Shift, I'll be talking about the power of steam. Yes, that is a horrible pun. But first, the news. Hello, space fans. Welcome to Space Radio. I'm Paul Sutter, astrophysicist at Ohio State, chief scientist at COSI, and for the next half hour, your agent of the stars. We've got an exciting show for you today on Space Radio, where we talk about all things space, astronomy, astrophysics, rocketry, science, and society. If it's above the Earth's atmosphere, it's in this show's universe. This show lives on listener questions. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern here in Studio A of WCBE Radio Columbus. So call 888-581-0708. Light it up. Get those calls in and we'll have a lovely little chat. You can also follow along on our live streams on YouTube and Facebook. Check out spaceradioshow.com for all the links. We'll take questions that we send there too. Seriously, folks, I've only prepped 10 minutes of show material tops, so get those calls in. Before I start taking calls, though, I want to share some interesting bits of news I caught recently, and I definitely do want to talk about the Interstellar Interloper, a rock that came in from another solar system, and I was going to lead with that, but then just, I swear, 15 minutes before we started recording, a piece of news came in, crossed my desktop on my laptop, and I just couldn't resist talking about it. It was so fun, this announcement. So you know the Great Pyramids, right? And you wouldn't normally expect me to talk about the Great Pyramids on Space Radio. I mean, of course, there is some interesting historical astronomy there. The Great Pyramids are lined up with some stars in the constellation Orion and some other stars in the sky, and that I'd love to talk about that sometime. But you usually don't hear me talking about the inside of pyramids. But check this out. We've mapped out some of the interior chambers, or what we thought was all of the interior chambers of the Great Pyramid in particular, the big one. And there's what's called the Queen's Chamber and the King's Chamber, and there's trapdoors and stuff and pits of venomous snakes. I'm not exactly 100% clear on what's inside of a pyramid, but from my understanding of popular movies in Indiana Jones, that's what pyramids contain. Now, we've always wondered, are there more rooms inside of a pyramid than what we know about? It's a pretty obvious question. And unfortunately, the only way to know is to, I don't know, like blow it up, right? And look for any holes. And that's kind of destructive. And the pyramids are kind of important and a historical landmark over 5,000 years old. So we'd like to preserve them. So we'd like to explore them without damaging them. Well, here come the physicists. Physicists are so clever, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a physicist. My fellow physicists are much more clever than I am, and they use a subatomic particle called a muon. A muon doesn't live long, just a couple microseconds. It's like an electron, if you know what an electron is. It's like that, only heavier. And there's cosmic rays that are constantly coming from space. High energy charged particles bombarding the Earth's atmosphere. They hit the Earth's atmosphere, and when they do, they create a shower of new particles, including muons. And these muons stream through the atmosphere, but if they hit rock or if they hit dirt, they'll be slowed down and they'll be stopped. So if you put a muon detector, say, inside one of these chambers in the pyramid and point it in different directions, you can see how many muons come into that pyramid from different directions. That can tell you if there's any, say, big empty chambers in the pyramid, because more muons will come from that direction than from any other direction. And you know what? There is a big, previously unknown chamber in the Great Pyramid. It's about the size of the Queen's Chamber, sits kind of above it. Now, we're not sure if that's intentional. Maybe an interior part of the pyramid collapsed. Maybe it's there to save weight. Maybe it's full of treasure. Oh my gosh. Maybe it's full of treasure. I'm not going to go all the way out there and say it is. But if it is, then physicists get first dibs, right? Because we found it. That's how it works. That's probably not how it works, but let's pretend that's how it works. And that's how we're going to fund the future of physics research, by looking for hidden Egyptian gold. That's the latest and greatest when it comes to space. If I have time, I'll return to the interstellar interloper. But right now, it's time to have a conversation. We've got a caller. Hey, Carson, thanks for calling Space Radio. Where on Earth are you? I know you called last week, and I'm super curious. Where do you live, Carson?
I'm in Southern California.
I'm so jealous. How's the weather out there?
Actually, today's a little chilly at about 19 Celsius.
Don't ever say that to me again, Carson. So I lived in California. I actually got my bachelor's in San Luis Obispo, California, on the Central Coast. And I know when Californians say, oh, it's a little bit chilly, to someone who lives in the Midwest, it's basically paradise. So you're lucky. Yeah. You're lucky that Greg, the producer, is on the controls. Otherwise, I would hang up on you right now. So you're on thin ice right now, Carson. You better have a good question.
But actually, this is a follow-up to a follow-up. The expanding universe, kind of a thread over the last however many shows, but I had asked if the expanding universe might actually, you know, after all said and done, be a function of the second law of thermodynamics. And before you answer that, may I ask, so we're on the same page with concept and vocabulary, do you subscribe to the 2, 3, or 4 laws of thermodynamics? And I use the word laws, as it is intended as well.
That is a good question. So I am going to go with 3 laws of thermodynamics. I mean, the exact number doesn't really matter. When you say second law, I think entropy. There's this zeroth law of thermodynamics, which is really the associative identity from mathematics. And so it's whether is that the first law or the zeroth law doesn't really matter. So we can discard the number convention for the laws and we'll just talk about entropy. How about that?
Yeah, I personally just have the zeroth and the first, you know, entropy. That's all I look at myself personally.
Well, okay. So the meat of the question is the expansion of the universe related to this concept of entropy? So 100 years ago, Edwin Hubble discovered that we live in an expanding universe, that every galaxy is, on average, moving further away from every other galaxy. This was actually predicted about a decade earlier by Einstein himself, but Einstein saw it in the equations. He saw it in the equations of general relativity, and he saw that a static universe that doesn't expand or doesn't contract is highly, highly unnatural. That the natural state of the universe is to be either expanding or contracting. If it's static, that is not a stable situation, and so it's unlikely. But according to all observations at the time, the universe was static. We had no idea we lived in an expanding universe when Einstein developed general relativity. And so he put in what he called like a little fix. The equations of general relativity permitted some flexibility. And he put in some extra terms to say, okay, the universe really is static. Then a decade later, Edwin Hubble came around and said, oh, by the way, it's expanding. And when no one was looking, Einstein erased that term and said, no, I was right all along. You know, just ignore. I'm just kidding. He admitted mistake. He actually called it his greatest blunder. You know, it's a shame. Yeah, it's a shame that he didn't go for it and just predict an expanding universe. I mean, who knows? He could have been famous. He could have been famous if he had left it in and stuck to his guns, but instead he chickened out. Now no one knows who Albert Einstein is. But
it does illustrate how the age and the time that you are growing up in the culture can so much affect your outlook and even the numbers that are in front of you. I say that just so maybe we jump out of the box that our experience, you know, has put us in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Einstein, according to all known evidence at the time in 1917, when Einstein developed general relativity, we lived in a static universe. We just had no idea. We had no idea. I mean, there were some little bits and pieces of evidence, but it wasn't sewn together into this concept, this framework of an expanding universe, until Edwin Hubble came along. And once Edwin Hubble came along and said, hey, everyone, we live in an expanding universe, and here's all the evidence, everyone's mind was blown. And we've had a few decades to kind of settle in and accept it. So you take that aside, like, okay, we live in an expanding universe. And now there's this other physics concept of entropy, which was just developed a few decades before general relativity. This came out of research and trying to understand how engines work and how heat flows and the concepts of thermodynamics. And unfortunately, we have to take a quick break. And so I will get to the tie-in between an expanding universe and entropy after the break. Don't forget to call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation. I'm Paul Sutter, and this is Space Radio. This show is brought to you by you. Visit patreon.com/PM Sutter to learn how you can support the show. More after the break.
Central Ohio's NPR station is supported by DNO Incorporated, purveyors of Ohio-grown produce and ready-to-eat fresh-cut fruits and vegetables to grocers, restaurants, institutions, and caterers, and providing nutritional meals for students of Central Ohio schools. More at dnoinc.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Paul Sutter, and this is Space Radio. We've got Carson, a wonderful caller with a wonderful question, on the line. And remember, you can join the conversation by calling 888-581-0708 or by following the Facebook and YouTube live streams. Check out spaceradioshow.com for the links. Now, Carson was asking about the expansion of the universe and its relation to this concept of entropy. Entropy is a very, very straightforward concept. Isolated systems tend to go from ordered to disordered. You start with a clean room, and next time you look, it's a messy room. You start with a nice unbroken egg and you drop it to the floor and it's all super messy and you couldn't put that egg back together. The universe goes from order to disorder. And Carson was wondering if that concept that we live in a universe that goes from order to disorder constantly is connected to this concept that we live in an expanding universe. And here's the thing. Even if 100 years ago, Edwin Hubble were to discover that the universe is contracting, that the galaxies are getting closer and closer together with time, entropy will still be increasing. Entropy increases no matter the physical state or the situation or the expansion or contraction of the universe. Entropy just goes up. It doesn't care about cosmology. It doesn't care what galaxies are doing. It doesn't care what happened 13.8 billion years ago. Entropy just goes up throughout the entire universe. In fact, that's one of the big reasons why we don't think we live in what's called a cyclic universe, where the universe expands, reaches a maximum size, then slows down and stops, and then contracts into what we call a big crunch, and then bounces back into a new Big Bang and expands and just kind of keeps going for eternity. Why that doesn't work is that entropy always increases, whether you're expanding or contracting. And if the universe has been around for an infinite amount of time, then by now we should have an infinite amount of entropy, which means there can be no ordered systems. There can be no stars. There can be no temperature differences. There can be no life. So we don't think we live in a cyclic universe for precisely the reason that entropy always goes up. How did that feel, Carson?
You know, it's very interesting what you're saying, and it's very consistent, except for the last part, and maybe I didn't hear you too well because I don't have a good connection. But the question of, I think you said there's a question of why then do we not have a finality, an end to orderliness? But if I got that correct, it would be that, and I'm going to reinterpret what you possibly meant by, say, the end of life as we know it, because as entropy increases, let's say spreads out, so the energy that we depend on, such as heat, we'll use that, we have to have the heat, in order to survive as a living organism. That entropy increases, thereby there's less and less heat available for the organisms that depend on it, such as ourselves. Were you kind of going that way?
Yeah, so this is, so I was talking about the past history of the universe, but the future history of the universe is also tied to this concept of entropy. Because entropy always goes up, heat differences in the universe eventually equalize. Eventually, every star will blow out, and no new stars will be born, matter will be too far separated, and the temperature differences between any two spots in the universe will eventually go away. This is what we believe, based on current evidence, to be the ultimate long-term fate of the universe. It's called the heat death of the universe, and that's kind of a bummer topic.
You know what? That kind of dovetails to the next question I was going to have, having to do with the Fermi paradox. If we take, you know, some people that get into class 1, 2, and 3, given enough time, if we can beat it, if we got into a class 3, we would be able to reorder mass or energy, same thing, in a way that would suit our needs in the future, and therefore we would secure our ability to survive. And I say that the idea of the Fermi paradox, nothing was ever mentioned about, I think it's called the Great Filter, and I think a guy named Hansen, and I was wondering what your thoughts were right along these lines.
Right. The Fermi paradox ties into that. So the Fermi paradox is, if it's so easy to generate life in the universe, as evidenced by the fact that we're here rather than not here, where is everybody else? It gets into questions about what are the chances of life appearing anywhere? What happens to intelligent life? How do you actually go about contacting other intelligent life? Even if you reach a certain level of extreme technological sophistication where you can rearrange matter and energy at your will at galactic scales or whatever, unfortunately, you can never beat entropy long term. Entropy is like the Vegas casino. The house always wins. You might win a game or two, but over the long haul, trust me, the odds are not in your favor. Thank you so much for the fascinating questions, Carson. Feel free to call back another week if you want to keep talking about the Fermi paradox. I do indeed have some thoughts on that. But before we go, before I get into the blue shift, I did want to talk about this other piece of news that is so fun, so fascinating, that came up this week. And that is a rock that fell into our solar system. Rocks fall into the inner solar system all the time, but they usually come from the outer solar system, from the Oort cloud, from the Kuiper belt. They're comets coming in. They whiz by the sun and they go out and they're fine. A couple weeks ago, a group of astronomers at the facility called PanSTARRS, which is a telescope and large facility, expensive gear up in Hawaii, noticed what they thought initially was just another comet, but then they measured its speed. And its speed was way faster than it ought to be. And then they got some more data, tracked its path, and they noticed it was coming in from a very odd angle. It wasn't coming in from the plane of our solar system. It was coming in from a very high inclination, way higher than anything else. And then they did some more observations, and they realized it wasn't a comet at all. It was more like an asteroid. It wasn't leaving a tail. It wasn't very icy. It looked like an asteroid. And the only conclusion we can come to is that this is the first time we've been able to capture, with pictures, a rock from another solar system. We think whatever this object is, formed in another solar system a long time ago, was ejected from it, has been traveling interstellar space for who knows how long, and then whizzed into our solar system, got temporarily caught up by our sun. It already whizzed by at over 100,000 miles per hour. That is fast. It's already almost on the way out. It's already, by the time you hear this, it's already past the orbit of Mars, likely past the orbit of Jupiter. It is going fast. It is trucking along. And it came from the void, and it will return to the void. A little asteroid visited our solar system for a brief moment. We suspected this has been happening since basically forever, since there's been a solar system, since there's rocks, but this is the first time we've been able to catch it. Thank you so much, Carson, for your really, really fun questions today. And we're almost out of time on Space Radio, but before we go, it's time for the Blue Shift. I'm Paul Sutter, and you're listening to Space Radio, and this is The Blue Shift, my opportunity to get a little bit closer to you. And this week, I want to talk about, like I said in the opener, this wonderful, wonderful pun, the power of STEAM. You all know what STEM is, right? Science, technology, engineering, and math. Well, if you put a little A in there, you get STEMA. And that sounds weird, so we flip the M and the A to give us STEAM. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. But of course, arts encompasses so many different disciplines. You know, dance, music, poetry, performance, all sorts of stuff. So now the acronym STEAM isn't really an acronym anymore. It just means everything that humans do, I guess, in a university. And I'm a member of OSU's STEAM Factory, a collaboration of over 150 faculty from 80 different departments working together for cross-disciplinary research and cross-disciplinary outreach. And we have a particular event. If you happen to live in the Columbus area, I want you to come to Franklinton Fridays. If you don't know about Franklinton Fridays, it's the second Friday of every single month over at 400 West Rich in Franklinton. Also, the Idea Foundry takes part, Glass Axes, Vandarelli Room, Land Grant Strongwater, all the institutions there have a big old party every second Friday of every month. And if you go into 400 West Rich, the big building, the abandoned toilet factory, go up to the second floor. I want you to go up to the second floor. There's still some artist galleries up on the second floor, so there'll still be music, there'll still be people doing their stuff. And tucked in the corner is Ohio State University's STEAM Factory. We have our doors open. We have a giant space at 400 West Rich that we lease for co-working, for events, and for Franklin and Fry for outreach. This is your opportunity to get exposed to some of the very, very cool stuff that we do at the STEAM Factory. It's this intersection of different disciplines working together, coming up with really fun, really crazy ideas, working together for research to try understand humanity and the world around us, and to share that with you. It is the STEAM Factory's premier outreach event. I'm proud to say that I am on the committee. I help organize these events. There's a small chance I'll be at the next one, at the November one. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I do know what the program is, and I do know that the program is absolutely fascinating and interesting. There's something at the STEAM Factory outreach events during Franklinton Fridays for everyone if you have a chance, and it's 100% free. Did I mention that? It is so free. We also have food. So I think I just clinched it. And unfortunately, this broadcast is almost done. Thank you for joining me on this voyage of space radio. Once again, I'm Paul Sutter, and this show is brought to you by the Ohio State University Department of Astronomy. Learn more at astronomy.osu.edu. This show is also brought to you by you. Visit patreon.com/PMSutter to learn how you can keep this show on the air. Thanks to Greg Mobius for producing, Dan Michalka for being awesome, and all the fine crew at WCBE Radio for making this show possible. We record it every Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can call 888-581-0708 to join me on the air. And you can catch the live streams on Facebook and YouTube. Go to spaceradioshow.com for all the links, the info. You can also follow me directly on Twitter and Facebook. My name is @PaulMattSutter. And of course, thanks to you for all your questions and for listening. See you next week. End of transmission.